Philippians chapter 1 and verse 12, where Paul writes, "Now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. It is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. Yes, and I will continue to rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I do not know. I am torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. But it is more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain. And I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith, so that through my being with you again, your boasting in Christ Jesus will abound on account of me."
It's interesting, after the recent events, the terrorism in Manchester and in London, that the theme of love and unity has come up, particularly amongst young people. I was quite impressed by the One Love Manchester concert with its theme of unity, with all the performers really taking up that theme, and to see 50,000 young people with their hands in the air calling out for unity shows that people really want it. And yet some of the songs that they were singing reflect that the human race, England, where we're at, we're far from that unity and that love. For example, the Black Eyed Peas, "Where is the love? If love and peace is so strong, where's it all gone wrong?" I won't try and do the the rap bit. But, you know, those kind of themes were coming out in the songs and the things that were sung and things that were said as well. So a desire for love and for unity is aspirational, but it's lacking in the world and society that we live in. Hatred and violence all around us. Where can people find that love and unity? Within the body of the church. That's where it should be seen. And that's what Simon was preaching on last week when he was talking about love and Paul's prayer for the Philippian believers, that they would grow in love, that their love would abound more and more in knowledge, that they will grow in that love, that it will be an intelligent love and an overflowing love and a pure and blameless love. So that was last week, and Paul was praying for the believers that he was writing to the church at Philippi. And in this these verses that we're looking at this evening, Paul talks about himself and his own position. Basically, if he was around today and he was sending a text message instead of this passage, he'll be saying something like, "Don't worry about me, I'm okay. I've got confidence and hope for the future." Are you a contented person? Are you contented? Are you contented in your marriage with your husband and wife, or wife, or if you're single, are you contented with that? With the home that you've got? with the family that you've got, the children that you've got, with the money, the income that you've got from your job, with your job. Are you happy and contented with that? Are you content with your house, with all the things in your life? If you take everything together, are you a contented person? There's always something that's not quite right, isn't it, with our situation? If anybody ever says life's perfect for them, I think they're living in some kind of fantasy world, because there's always things that we struggle with and battles that we have and things that we wish weren't there. But if we have that sense that God is with us in our lives, that we are serving him, that there is a purpose, even in the difficulties and struggles of our lives, we can have that sense of contentment and even joy, which is what Paul reflects on as he talks about himself in this passage. So we're going to be looking at two things about Paul as he talks about his own experience tonight. As Simon's already explained, Paul, his contentment and actually his joy in his very unideal situation, and also his hope for the future. As he looks to the future, whether he lives or dies, he has great hope and joy for the future. So where is Paul when he writes this letter to the church at Philippi? He writes to thank them for their gift to him. And he's in prison, probably in Rome. Some people think it might be Ephesus, but most people think he was in prison in Rome. But he was definitely in prison, in chains, in bondage, all the time. I've only been in a prison once, as a visitor. And they did let me out at the end of the day. And it's not a pleasant experience being in prison. And it wouldn't have been pleasant in a cold, dark Roman prison where he had to be chained to a guard day by day, 24/7. And it would have been a particular frustration for Paul because he was this great missionary and evangelist wanting to share the gospel with the world, travel around and build churches and preach and teach, and he was stopped from doing it. I was watching a program about Muhammad Ali. Frank Skinner was talking about his hero, Muhammad Ali. And one thing that happened to Muhammad Ali when he was at the peak of his boxing career was he refused to go to Vietnam and to be signed up. And he was sentenced to prison, which he didn't go into. But he was stopped from boxing. For 3 years, he was unable to box, the thing that he loved to do. And it must have been like that for Paul. He was prevented from doing the thing that he wanted to do, stuck in prison. And not only that, not only was he in a very unideal situation, but there were things going on outside that were less than ideal for Paul. He says in verse 15, some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry. Or in verse 17, the former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing they can stir up trouble for me. So there were people outside who were taking the opportunity to kind of edge their way up, as it were. They were seeing an opportunity with Paul, the great evangelist, the great preacher, in prison. They were taking advantage and they were stirring up trouble for him, which would have been a double whammy, as it were, a double problem for him as he was there in prison. It's sad, isn't it, when you see that in Christian work, people acting out of envy and rivalry. I can just think back to Brexit and when David Cameron resigned, and there was that jockeying for position as all different people tried to get that position that he had to become a prime minister, and eventually Mrs. May got that. But there was all sorts of people trying to take advantage of that situation and to become prime minister. Does that ever happen in Christian work? Does that ever happen in our experience as we seek to serve God, that somebody, other people do things out of envy and selfish ambition? Paul's reaction is to say this in verse 18. What does it matter? What does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached, and because of that, I rejoice. He could be joyful and content because his focus was on Christ and on serving him and on loving him and on his kingdom going forward. I wonder how we react when we're sidelined for whatever reason. I'll just give you one illustration. Imagine that you've got a friend and she's a really good friend of yours, and you bring her to church and she becomes a Christian, wonderfully becomes a Christian. And then you notice that she's becoming very friends with lots of other people in the church, and gradually, although she was your best friend, she's moving away from you, and you find that she's going out with other friends in the church, meeting with other groups, and suddenly you feel sidelined. You feel like you've been put, you're not that close friend that you once were. How would you react to that? How do you react when perhaps, if you're a preacher and you have great opportunity to preach and to teach, and then for whatever reason it might be, you're unable to carry on, you have to step to one side. And then somebody else comes in and they take control and they make good of all the hard work that you put in. Paul's attitude is to say, what does it matter? What does it matter as long as Christ is preached, as long as God's kingdom is going forward? That's the important thing. That's the thing that's really crucial. So Paul, as he writes to the church of Philippi to assure them that he's all right in prison, he says, I can be content and joyful because I can see God's work going forward. I can see God's work being advanced even through me being in prison. I can see that even though some people outside are preaching out of rivalry and envy and strife, the kingdom is going forward. The gospel is being preached. People are being converted. And he can rejoice. Because of this, I can rejoice. So that's the first thing, Paul's contentment. I wonder how we would describe ourselves. Are we content if God is at work in our situation? Are we content that whatever troubles we may face, that if God is with us and that God's gospel is going forward, we can be rejoicing? So that's the first point this evening, Paul's contentment with his situation. And the second thing is Paul's hope for the future. What is it? What is his hope? What is he looking for as he is in prison there and he must wonder what the future holds? Well, he obviously hopes he's going to be released from prison, and it seems that he was. And he says, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. So he's hoping to be released. But then he goes on to say that whatever happens, whether he dies or whether he lives, he's able to rejoice. And he's able to rejoice because for him to live is Christ and to die is gain. To live is Christ, to die is gain. Now, I had a dream about a month ago. A very strange dream, because my dad was still alive. And he went to the doctors, and the doctor was called Dr. Heath in the dream. And he went to the doctors, and for some reason the doctor pulled out my notes and said that I was dying, that I had an incurable disease and I was dying. And in the dream, all my family sort of gathered round, we had a party, and I remember, anyway, things got, I can't remember the rest of the dream. Now, the reason I had that dream, I think, was because I'd watched a programme. I'm fine, by the way, I've got no incurable disease, everything's fine. The reason I had that dream, I'd watched a programme on TV the previous night called American Justice about justice in Florida, in the state of Florida. And this woman was shot and she thought she was going to die. And so as she was thought she was dying, she said she started to think of all the people that she was going to leave behind when she died and all the things that she was going to leave behind. It made her so sad to think, particularly of all those loved ones, her husband, her children, all were left behind. As it happened, she didn't die, but she just reflected on that. And it's true, isn't it? As we face the end of our lives, as we think about when we die, There is a sense that this world is our home. It's the only thing that we've known. We've got friends, loved ones. There's so much in this world that we love. And I'm sure that was true for Paul. I'm sure there was much that he loved. He hasn't got a death wish here, as he talks about the fact that he can face death. But the connection between this world and the next for Paul was Christ. At the end of the day, it's all about relationships. He had that relationship with Christ in this life, and he could look forward to meeting Christ face to face in the next. But he says, I'm torn between the two. As he reflects on his life, perhaps thinks he may be getting to the end of his life here. He's certainly not a young man as he writes this letter. He thinks, well, what's to become of me? And he thinks about dying, and he finds that he's torn between carrying on living and dying and being with Christ. Now, when Holbrook Church closed a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, Ruth and I had to decide whether we're going to carry on living in Horsham or move to Hayward Heath. And it wasn't a foregone conclusion. We had to think the pros and cons, things that we liked about Horsham and where we lived and why we might move to Hayward Heath. And so we were torn between the two options. What should we do? What should we choose? And in the end of the day, it's really all about relationships. What are relationships are important to you? And that's the same for Paul. Just look at verse 20. Well, 20 to start with, then through to 21. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but have sufficient courage, so that Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, to die is gain. To live this life is to live for Christ, in relationship with Christ, serving Christ. As he puts it, fruitful labour. So living in this life, he's very happy. He's contented, he has fruitful labour. But to die is to meet with the one that he's loved more than anything throughout this life, to meet with his Saviour, the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, a few months ago, Ruth and I were in London and we decided to go to Borough Market, which has been in the news recently for all the wrong reasons. Borough Market's a really interesting place to go to during the day. There's all sorts of stalls selling things like, I don't know, live sea urchins, different sorts of cheeses, bread. It's really nice wandering around there. In fact, it used to be a vegetable market, and my grandfather and Graham's grandfather used to drive up there on a horse, from Down in Kent, drive up there every morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, used to set off and buy his vegetables and come back to Down. World's changed, isn't it, really? I don't think anybody could do that today, even get through all the traffic. But as I was standing by the entrance waiting for Ruth, because ladies always take longer in markets than men, there was a huge blackboard. I can't tell you how big, but it was much wider than that. And people were invited to write on it the one thing they would like to do before they die. And I had quite a bit of time, as it happened, and so I read through the whole thing. I didn't write anything on there. Now, here are some of the things people wrote, uncensored. Hit the Appalachian Trail, helicopter ski, meet Tom Hanks, fully accept God's grace. That's an interesting one, isn't it, someone to write on that. Make my mum a proud mum, have a baby, have sex, and so on. Many, many things like this. And it put me in mind of that sort of bucket list that people have. Things you want to do before you die. You know, you want to go to the Grand Canyon, or you want to go to wherever it might be. Antarctica, Ruth was saying she'd like to go to earlier today. So, things you want to do before you die. Paul didn't have a bucket list. He didn't have a list of things he wanted to do before he died. Living was fruitful labour. Dying was to be with Christ. It was as simple as that. And that was what motivated him to carry on living, to be useful, to be working for Christ's kingdom and reaching out to others. And that was really his approach to life. And that was why he was able to be joyful, even in prison. So there's those two aspects, really, to Paul's experience as he explains to the church of Philippi that even though he's in prison, they don't need to worry about him because he's full of joy and thinking about them rather than himself. Well, just to apply that then as we close, where is home for you when you think of home? We think sometimes of places that we love, people that we love. Home is where our heart is, isn't it? That's what home is. And we sometimes talk about, when someone dies, that they're called home. Which is quite a thing to say, isn't it? Someone called home. They've gone to a place they've never been before, but they're called home to be with Christ. Well, you may be a young believer this evening. You may have your life in front of you, or at least you hope and think that you have, and many things that you want to do. Or you may be someone who is coming to the end of their lives. Well, in a sense, as we get older, we all become more aware that we're not going to live forever. We can take comfort from this passage because we know that Christ will give us the strength to live our lives here. We can be fruitful for him in whatever he's called us to do. And we can have great hope for the future, that however long, whether the Lord keeps us for another 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, that we will be able to serve him and live for him. But there will always be that hope of one day seeing Christ in heaven. So that's Paul's vision. We could almost take the key verse tonight, that verse 21. For me, to live is Christ, to die is gain. Really, if you think about and ponder on that verse this week, it kind of unpacks the whole of what Paul has to say in this passage.